The Tragedy of Julius Caesar by William Shakespeare. Act 1, Scene 2. The same, a public place. Enter in procession with music, Caesar, Antony for the course, Calpurnia, Portia, Decius, Cicero, Brutus, Cassius, and Casca, a great crowd following, among them a soothsayer. Calpurnia. Peace, ho! Caesar speaks. The music ceases. Calpurnia.
Here, my lord.
Stand you directly in Antonius's way, when he doth run his course, Antonius.
Caesar, my lord.
Forget not in your speed, Antonius, to touch Calpurnia, for our elders say the baron touched in this holy chase shake off their sterile course.
I shall remember. When Caesar says do this, it is performed.
Set on, and leave no ceremony out.
Music begins.
Caesar!
Ha! Who calls?
Bid every noise be still. Peace yet again.
The music ceases.
Who is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue shriller than all the music cry, Caesar! Speak! Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of March.
What man is that?
A soothsayer bids you beware the Ides of March.
Set him before me. Let me see his face.
Fellow, come from the throng. Look upon Caesar.
What sayest thou to me now? Speak once again.
Beware the Ides of March.
He is a dreamer. Let us leave him. Pass.
Exit all but Brutus and Cassius.
Will you go see the order of the course?
Not I.
I pray you do.
I am not gamesome. I do lack some part of that quick spirit that is in Antony.
Let me not hinder, Cassius, your desires. I'll leave you.
Brutus, I do observe you now of late. I have not from your eyes that gentleness and show of love as I was wont to have. You bear too stubborn and too strange a hand over your friend that loves you.
Cassius, be not deceived. If I have veiled my look, I turn the trouble of my countenance merely upon myself. Vexed I am of late with passions of some difference, conceptions only proper to myself, which give some soil, perhaps, to my behaviors. But let not therefore my good friends be grieved, among which number Cassius be you one. Nor construe any further my neglect than that poor Brutus, with himself at war, forgets the shows of love to other men.
Then, Brutus, I have much mistook your passion, by means whereof this breast of mine hath buried thoughts of great value, worthy cogitations. Tell me, good Brutus, can you see your face?
No, Cassius, for the eye sees not itself, but by reflection by some other thing.
'Tis just, and it is very much lamented, Brutus, that you have no such mirrors as will turn your hidden worthiness into your eye, that you might see your shadow. I have heard where many of the best respect in Rome, except immortal Caesar, speaking of Brutus, and groaning underneath this age's yoke, have wished that noble Brutus had his eyes.
Into what dangers would you lead me, Cassius, that you would have me seek into myself for that which is not in me?
Therefore, good Brutus, be prepared to hear, and since you know you cannot see yourself so well as by reflection, I, your glass, will modestly discover to yourself that of yourself which you yet know not of. And be not jealous on me, gentle Brutus, were I a common laugher, or did use to stale with ordinary oaths my love to every new protester, if you know that I do fawn on men, and hug them hard and after scandal them, or if you know that I profess myself in banqueting to all the rout, then hold me dangerous.
There is a flourish and a shout.
What means this shouting? I do fear the people choose Caesar for their king.
Aye, do you fear it? Then must I think you would not have it so.
I would not, Cassius, yet I love him well. But wherefore do you hold me here so long? What is it that you would impart to me? If it be aught toward the general good, set honour in one eye and death in the other, and I will look on both indifferently, for let the gods so speed me as I love the name of honour more than I fear death.
I know that virtue to be in you, Brutus, as well as I do know your outward favour. Well, honour is the subject of my story. I cannot tell what you and other men think of this life, but for my single self, I had as lief not be as live to be in awe of such a thing as I myself. I was born free as Caesar. So were you. We both have fed as well, and we can both endure the winter's cold as well as he. For once upon a raw and gusty day, the troubled Tiber chafing with her shores, Caesar said to me, "Darest thou, Cassius, now leap in with me into this angry flood, and swim to yonder point?" Upon the word, accoutred as I was, I plunged in, and bade him follow, so indeed he did. The torrent roared, and we did buffet it with lusty sinews, throwing it aside and stemming it with hearts of controversy. But ere we could arrive the point proposed, Caesar cried, "Help me, Cassius, or I sink!" Ay, as Aeneas, our great ancestor, did from the flames of Troy upon his shoulder the old Anchises bear, so from the waves of Tiber did I, the tired Caesar. And this man is now become a god, and Cassius is a wretched creature, and must bend his body, if Caesar carelessly but nod on him. He had a fever when he was in Spain, and when the fit was on him, I did mark how he did shake. 'Tis true, this god did shake. His coward lips did from their colour fly, and that same eye whose bend doth awe the world did lose his lustre. I did hear him groan, aye, and that tongue of his that bade the Romans mock him and write his speeches in their books. Alas, it cried, "Give me some drink, Titinius." As a sick girl, ye gods, it doth amaze me. A man of such a feeble temper should so get the start of the majestic world and bear the palm alone.
There is another shout and flourish.
Another general shout. I do believe that these applauses are for some new honours that are heaped on Caesar.
Why, man, he doth bestride the narrow world like a colossus, and we petty men walk under his huge legs and peep about to find ourselves dishonourable graves. Men at some time are masters of their fates. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves, that we are underlings.
Brutus and Caesar, what should be in that Caesar? Why should that name be sounded more than yours? Write them together, yours is as fair a name. Sound them, it doth become the mouth as well. Weigh them, it is as heavy. Conjure with them. Brutus will start a spirit as soon as Caesar.
Now in the names of all the gods at once, upon what meat doth this our Caesar feed that he is grown so great? Age, thou art shamed. Rome, thou hast lost the breed of noble bloods. When went there by an age since the great flood, but it was famed with more than with one man? When could they say till now that talked of Rome that her wide walls encompassed but one man? Now is it Rome indeed and room enough, when there is in it but one only man?
Oh, you and I have heard our fathers say there was a Brutus once that would have brooked the eternal devil to keep his state in Rome as easily as a king.
That you do love me, I am nothing jealous. What you would work me to, I have some aim. How I have thought of this and of these times, I shall recount thereafter. For this present I would not, so with love I might entreat you, be any further moved. What you have said I will consider. What you have to say I will with patience hear, and find a time both meet to hear and answer such high things. Till then, my noble friend, chew upon this. Brutus had rather be a villager than to repute himself a son of Rome under these hard conditions as this time is like to lay upon us.
I am glad that my weak words have struck but thus much show of fire from Brutus. The games are done, and Caesar is returning. As they pass by, pluck Casca by the sleeve, and he will, after his sour fashion, tell you what hath proceeded, worthy note, today.
Caesar and his train re-enter.
I will do so, but look you, Cassius, the angry spot doth glow on Caesar's brow, and all the rest look like a chidden train. Calpurnia's cheek is pale, and Cicero looks with such ferret and such fiery eyes as we have seen him in the capital, being crossed in conference by some senators. Casca will tell us what the matter is. Antonius.
Caesar.
Let me have men about me that are fat, sleek-headed men, and such as sleep o' nights. Yon Cassius has a lean and hungry look. He thinks too much. Such men are dangerous.
Fear him not, Caesar. He's not dangerous. He is a noble Roman and well given.
Would he were fatter. But I fear him not, yet if my name were liable to fear, I do not know the man I should avoid so soon as that spare Cassius.
He reads much. He is a great observer, and he looks quite through the deeds of men. He loves no plays, as thou dost, Antony. He hears no music. Seldom he smiles, and smiles in such a sort, as if he mocked himself and scorned his spirit that could be moved to smile at anything.
Such men as he be never at heart's ease, whiles they behold a greater than themselves, and therefore are they very dangerous. I rather tell thee what is to be feared than what I fear, for always I am Caesar. Come, on my right hand, for this ear is deaf, and tell me truly what thou thinkest of him.
Exit Caesar and his train. Casca stays.
You pulled me by the cloak. Would you speak with me?
Aye, Casca, tell us what hath chanced today that Caesar looks so sad.
Why, you were with him, were you not?
I should not then ask Casca what had chanced.
Why, there was a crown offered him, and being offered him, he put it by with the back of his hand thus, and then the people fell a-shouting.
What was the second noise for?
Why, for that too.
They shouted thrice? What was the last cry for?
Why, for that too.
Was the crown offered him thrice?
Aye, marry, wasn't, and he put it by thrice, every time gentler than other, and at every putting by mine honest neighbours shouted.
Who offered him the crown?
Why, Antony.
Tell us the manner of it, gentle Casca.
I can as well be hanged as tell the manner of it. It was mere foolery. I did not mark it. I saw Mark Antony offer him a crown, yet 'twas not a crown neither. 'Twas one of these coronets. And as I told you, he put it by once. But for all that, to my thinking, he would fain have had it. Then he offered it to him again. Then he put it by again. But to my thinking, he was very loath to lay his fingers off it. And then he offered it the third time.
He put it in the third time by, and still, as he refused it, the rabblement shouted and clapped their chopped hands and threw up their sweaty nightcaps and uttered such a deal of stinking breath because Caesar refused the crown that it had almost choked Caesar, for he swooned and fell down at it, and for mine own part, I durst not laugh for fear of opening my lips and receiving the bad air.
But soft, I pray you, what did Caesar swoon?
He fell down in the marketplace and foamed at mouth and was speechless.
'Tis very like. He hath the falling sickness.
No, Caesar hath it not. But you and I and honest Casca, we have the falling sickness.
I know not what you mean by that, but I am sure Caesar fell down. If the tag-rag people did not clap him and hiss him according as he pleased and displeased them, as they used to do the players in the theatre, I am no true man.
What said he when he came unto himself?
Marry, before he fell down, when he perceived the common herd was glad he refused the crown, he plucked me ope his doublet and offered them his throat to cut, and I had been a man of any occupation, if I would not have taken him at a word, I would I might go to hell among the rogues. And so he fell. When he came to himself again, he said, if he had done or said anything amiss, he desired their worships to think it was his infirmity. Three or four wenches where I stood cried, alas, good soul, and forgave him with all their hearts. But there's no need to be taken of them. If Caesar had stabbed their mothers, they would have done no less.
And after that, he came thus sad away.
Aye.
Did Cicero say anything?
Aye. He spoke Greek.
To what effect?
Nay, and I tell you that, I'll ne'er look you in the face again, but those that understand him smiled at one another and shook their heads. But for mine own part, it was Greek to me. I could tell you more news, too, Marullus and Flavius, for pulling scarfs off Caesar's images, or put to silence. Fare you well. There was more foolery yet, if I could remember it.
Will you sup with me tonight, Casca?
No, I am promised forth.
Will you dine with me tomorrow?
Aye, if I be alive, and your mind hold, and your dinner worth the eating.
Good. I will expect you.
Do so. Farewell, both.
Casca exits. What a blunt fellow is this grown to be. He was quick mettle when he went to school.
So is he now in execution of any bold or noble enterprise, however he puts on this tardy form. This rudeness is a sauce to his good wit, which gives men stomach to digest his words with better appetite.
And so it is. For this time I will leave you. Tomorrow, if you please, to speak with me, I will come home to you. Or, if you will, come home to me, and I will wait for you.
I will do so. Till then, think of the world.
Brutus exits.
Well, Brutus, thou art noble, yet I see thy honourable mettle may be wrought from that it is disposed. Therefore 'tis meet that noble minds keep ever with their likes. For who so firm that cannot be seduced? Caesar doth bear me hard, but he loves Brutus. If I were Brutus now, and he were Cassius, he should not humour me. I will this night in several hands in at his windows throw, as if they came from several citizens, writings all tending to the great opinion that Rome holds of his name, wherein obscurely Caesar's ambition shall be glanced at. And after this let Caesar seat him sure, for we will shake him or worse days endure.
Cassius exits. The end of Act One, Scene Two of Julius Caesar. Read by Rick Kistner. For Lit2Go on the web at fcit.usf.edu.